It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. During a recent color-only program, Scott in Superior asked us to examine the critical work of Child Protective Services. State authorities say the goal of Child Protective Services is to help parents and caregivers make necessary changes so that kids are safe and protected in their homes. Call in with questions or your comments at any point, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. DJ Miles is Child Protective Services Manager for Green Bay in the southern part of the state along the Illinois border. DJ, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, thank you. And it's Monroe, Green County.
Oh, Monroe, Green. Yes. Okay, yes, thank you. Ashley Nelson is Children and Family Services Supervisor for Rusk County. Did I get that one right?
Yes, you did.
Yes, okay. You're up in the northwestern part of our state. Good morning, Ashley. Let's start with you. Child Protective Services in Wisconsin receives tens of thousands of child abuse and neglect reports, suspected child abuse and neglected reports each year. How does a local agency like yours decide which reports to follow up on?
So when we receive a report of alleged abuse or neglect, we compare that to the statute. What does that definition of abuse or neglect look like? And what is the information in the report? Do we feel that that is enough sufficient information for us to intervene into a family's life? So we compare the information to what the statute says the definitions of abuse and neglect are.
How much time and effort do you look at each individual report that comes in?
We spend a lot of time reviewing those reports and making sure that we have thorough information. And if we need to gain more information to make a more informed decision, that we follow up on that and we do that, because we don't want to violate anybody's rights by intervening if we really don't have the authority to do that. But we also want to make sure that if that family really does need assistance, that we're getting to them so we can help them through this.
DJ, help us also understand how these reports come to your agency, you know, how do they come to the county level?
Mostly from people from the community via phone. And then we do get some people walking in, or emails or letters, but primarily over the phone from members of the community.
And so what happens to reports that are screened out through this process?
All reports that come into the agency go into our state automated information system that is a confidential database that only basically people that do our job in Wisconsin can see. So any report is recorded in that system, whether or not it's screened in or screened out.
Okay. And so, DJ, a screened in report by Child Protective Services means that a social worker will be following up, will make a face-to-face contact with a household either that day or perhaps some days later. What is that first meeting like?
Well, the first meeting is basically trying to build rapport with family and gathering information to determine if, you know, what are the next steps are. But it really would depend on the case and the family. Most cases we have anywhere from immediate to up to 5 days to respond to any screened in report, depending on seriousness.
Ashley, in this first contact, an initial contact, how do you establish trust? How do you build rapport?
So when a worker is showing up at a family's house or at the school, we're really there to say, hey, we have some information. We're here to help. And we're there, you know, just as much to show that this didn't happen as much as, you know, we have to figure out if it did or did not happen, because we're there to establish safety. But really, we're trying to talk with the family about what's going on. What can we do to help? We're not the bad guys, because that is a common reputation that CPS just has in general, is that we're the bad guys. So that is a big barrier to break down right away. But you know, just establishing right from the beginning that we are here to help, like no matter what that circumstance is that led us to the family, we really do want to help and move forward.
We're talking about the work of Child Protective Services in Wisconsin. Ashley Nelson is with Children and Family Services in Rusk County. DJ Miles is with Child Protective Services in Greene County in the southern part of the state. You can join in along the way with your questions at 800-642-1234. So, Ashley, social workers with Child Protective Services determine whether a child needs to be ultimately removed from the home. How do you get to those steps? How do you determine whether that step is needed?
So, really, removal from the home is going to be our last resort. That is not what we want. That's not the goal. But there are some cases where we just cannot keep a child or children safe in that home. That's never the goal, but if a child cannot be safe in that home, the safest option is for them to go someplace else that is safe, and we always try to make sure that that's family, too, or somebody that they know, so it's not them going with a stranger, but the goal is to keep them in the house if we can do that, if we can get services in the home, other people to help monitor safety, then that's the route that we're going to go if we can make that work.
DJ, how do you take that step? How do you decide whether a child lives with, you know, lives with a family member or within a foster care home or group care? What is that like?
Well, like Ashley said, we look for what's called the least restrictive environment. We try to keep children in their home if at all possible by putting in services in place could support the family to keep the child safe in the home. If that isn't possible because of the circumstances or possibly the family isn't willing to do that, we would next look at family members. And then if we absolutely can't find a family member, then we would maybe look for a foster home. And then we would continue to research and try and find family members if we possibly can as soon as possible to put the child in the family setting.
And in the family setting, why is that so imperative? Why will you go to much greater lengths to keep that child in their next of kin?
Well, what research shows is that children fare much better within their natural family and their own community where their peers are, where their family is. And actually, in many cases, the child can be more traumatized by being removed from the home than actually trying to keep the family together.
Ashley, you know, I want to run this by you. Columbia University researchers, they poured through two decades of national data finding that foster children are at a lower risk of poverty than other children. What do you make of that? And is this happening in your region?
I guess I don't have an answer for that, to be honest.
DJ, do you have any insights there? Because, you know, poverty is a big issue here. It's traumatic. It means instability. How does foster care then fit into this overarching system?
Actually, any research that I've been aware of that outcomes for kids coming out of foster care, particularly if they age out, actually fare worse overall in terms of employment, education, and overall success. So I'm kind of surprised by that data.
Yes. We have DJ Miles and Ashley Nelson with us. They support child well-being and protection as supervisors in Greene and Rusk counties, opposite parts of the state. You can add your voice throughout the discussion as we examine the work of Child Protective Services. Call in with your question at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The System for Keeping Children Safe, Child Protective Services, it typically receives tens of thousands of reports of child maltreatment in a year. And we learned what this means at the local county level. And thanks again to Scott in Superior for suggesting a program about child protective services. You can call in with questions and thoughts anytime at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have DJ Miles, who is Child Protective Services Manager for Greene County. Ashley Nelson has this role for Rusk County, and they stay with us. DJ, a family may voluntarily participate in child protective services or, in other cases, be court-ordered to participate. What challenges do your social workers face when developing a child safety plan?
Well, it can be very complex, and we try very hard to keep children within their homes, and it could require anything from daycare assistance to round-the-clock supervision, ideally by family members. It could be any number of things. So, I mean, I think the challenge is building rapport with the family so they are on board, finding people to provide the supports, and having the resources to provide those supports.
What about those resources? How is your budget doing?
It's always a challenge, but you know, we've been pretty successful to provide as much as we can, particularly in, and I think Rusk could be the same, small counties that don't have a lot of outside resources, but we're pretty creative. The state also gives us funding if you participate for safety support services, which helps pay for some of those things.
Ashley, what is your experiences building these child safety plans in Rusk County?
So I'm going to have to agree that in a small county, you have to be very creative. We are not very rich with resources or services, so we really do lean on family members and family friends to assist us with supervision in the home if that's the case. But we do try to be creative. There are a lot of challenges when you don't have like AODA providers or mental health providers.
What is AODA? Can you explain?
Sorry.
That's okay.
Yep. Alcohol or drug abuse.
Okay.
In Rusk County in particular, one of our biggest challenges is methamphetamine use. Mm. We don't have a lot of providers that can assist families through that. We're very limited, and that is a big issue here. And I think it is across the state, but that is a huge challenge when we can't address the actual issue and the concerns with the parents and move them forward. That is a huge barrier for us.
DJ, do you find barriers to methamphetamine abuse?
Some, but actually Greene County has been pretty fortunate that it hasn't touched our county in a mass epidemic like it has in other places throughout the state. But we certainly have a significant number of child abuse and neglect reports related to alcohol and drug abuse.
I wonder, with geography being on the Illinois border, how do you manage that when family and friends may live in another state? Or is that not an issue?
It's an issue. It can be. We can typically work with the other state to provide some courtesy services. There is a thing called Interstate Compact, which you can make a request for the other state to provide services. If it's, you know, it kind of depends. If it's close across the border, we can sometimes just make that work.
Ashley, what about you in a rural area? How far do your social workers travel to meet with families?
I think at the furthest distance, it's about an hour.
And is that a barrier at all?
Yes. It is a huge barrier, especially when you need to go meet with a family in their home. And it's also a barrier for those families. Sometimes it takes them an hour and a half or longer to get into town or any place with services. So given financial resources and providers available, that them are barriers for families.
How, I wonder, did the COVID pandemic changed these meetings, or what has gone back to normal and what hasn't?
So I think
both of you can definitely unpack that. Ashley, you first.
Okay, so we are back to normal from COVID, here practicing in Rusk. And during COVID, that was very, very difficult because if you can't go into the home for, you know, quarantine because somebody's quarantined or it's hard to assess safety when you can't get eyes on a family and be in there and talking with them. And that's hard to build trust when they can't see you or they're looking at you over a screen, over Zoom. It's hard to build rapport with somebody through technology.
Mm. What has that been like for you, DJ?
Similar to what Ashley said, I think one thing maybe not everybody understands is that we still were required to go into the field during the pandemic. We took precautions, but we still had to meet with families. And we still had to go into homes, but yes, there were challenges if people were quarantined or, you know, were sick or staff got COVID. So that was a challenge, but we still had to pretty much do our jobs to the best of our ability. The state did allow us to do virtual contacts in when possible or when it was okay. And that has been lifted too. So we're pretty much back to normal.
We have DJ Miles from Greene County, Ashley Nelson from Rusk County, as we look at the local county work of Child Protective Services here in Wisconsin and gathering your questions along the way at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Ashley, Child Protective Services is seeking to ensure that parents who are accused of abuse are able to visit their kids under safe conditions. And you say that some people disagree with this approach. Why do you prioritize these family interactions?
It is so important for kids to see their parents and other family members that they are close with, especially if they're no longer living in the home. They need to maintain those connections and those bonds. They need to be with those people that they love and care about, because no matter what we think from the outside, you know, happened, if, you know, every parent loves their child. Every parent loves their child. I've never heard of any parent that we've worked with that says, I don't love my child. I don't want to see my child. So we need to prioritize those families. That is their unit, and we have to make that a priority. Some people do disagree with that, but you know, that is their family. That's their lifeline. That's who they are.
DJ, what would you like to add there about prioritizing these family interactions?
Well, what research has shown, and I mean, I guess my experience doing this over 30 plus years, is that you have to maintain the attachment between children and their parents, and that doing so generally decreases the amount of time they have to remain out of their home.
Mm. Let's bring in Lisa in Milwaukee with a question. Lisa, hi, what's on your mind?
Good morning. Hey, I have a question. Does the state have any liability from keeping you guys doing your job, you social workers and things? Because with the COVID and stuff, it just, you know what I mean? It hurt a lot of people, not just the victims of these hideous crimes of, you know, abuse and stuff, but you guys couldn't do your jobs properly.
Lisa, thank you. Ashley, can you go into that at all in terms of what you couldn't do due to the pandemic and what impact it has had post-pandemic?
So I think, like DJ said before, was that we still had to do our job. Like, we still had to go out in the field. We had to meet with families. We had to wear face masks, and we had to, you know, hand sanitizer and remain so, like, do social distancing if we had to meet with people outside. And they did allow us to do virtual if the circumstances called for it, but we still had to do that job. I don't think, I guess that's a tough question for the liability piece, because we were still out there doing what we were supposed to do to the best of our ability. And I think that that's where that liability piece is if we did everything in good faith as much as we could, I think that it's the social workers were protected.
DJ, as we wrap up here, what limitations exist for Child Protective Services that people who are outside your work should understand?
Probably two things. The biggest thing to understand is that we are governmental intervention and that we're dictated by laws and standards and that we can't just go into people's homes without a good reason or a good cause based on our assessment. And so, people don't really understand that we can't just, go into someone's home and start interviewing them unless there's a reason. Mm. And everything we do is confidential, so we can never talk about it. We can't talk to the press or the public other people about, specific scenarios or families. So it's very often goes misunderstood.
Thank you both for joining us. DJ Miles there, Child Protective Services Manager for Greene County along the Illinois border. Ashley Nelson, Child Family Services Supervisor for Rusk County. We have links, WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a piece about collecting stories for future generations.
UW-Oshkosh has completed a massive oral history project documenting the campus's response to the COVID-19 pandemic. As WPR's Joe Schultz reports, it could serve as a resource to help future historians understand the pandemic's impact on higher education in the United States.
People filter into an auditorium at UW-Oshkosh. They talk with one another as audio from campus community members begins to play in the background. Suddenly, the auditorium goes silent as lecturer Grace Lim takes the stage. She poses a question to the audience about the pandemic.
Why, after 3 years, would we want to revisit those really terrible, dark days?
Her answer?
Telling the story of our collective trauma, our loss, and our resilience is the goal of the campus COVID stories.
Lim has shared thousands of stories from the community for nearly a decade through the Humans of Oshkosh Facebook page and books. But as the pandemic started to drift into the rearview, a new storytelling project emerged. Campus COVID stories would document how UW-Oshkosh responded to the pandemic.
It took me a while to understand how important this is, not only for the future generations and the historians, but I think it was necessary, it was critical that we tell our stories. We need to acknowledge that we all went through a trauma.
UW-Oshkosh's pandemic tale mirrors other schools in the UW system. It went virtual in spring 2020, returned to a hybrid model in the fall, and gradually worked its way out of precautions as vaccines became available. The campus COVID stories provide what Lim describes as the most complete account of a campus response in the system. Over three semesters, Lim and her students collected over 1.5 million words from administrators, faculty, staff, and students.
I believe these are the stories that connect us as a community.
The project also showcases the plight of UWO's essential workers. That includes lecturer Heidi Hansen's students in the College of Nursing. Many worked as CNAs at nursing homes and hospitals in the midst of a global pandemic.
These are 19, 20-year-old kids who are alone in a long-term care facility with multiple COVID patients and people dying more rapidly than they've ever experienced or may ever experience.
But she has shared this wisdom with her students.
Your grandkids are going to ask you what you did during the pandemic, and you will be able to share with them that you helped prevent disease transmission and you saved lives.
The project also preserved Jada Berg's experience. When she was a UW-Oshkosh nursing student, the tragedy of the pandemic hit especially close to home. In late 2021, her mother was hospitalized with COVID-19, shortly before she was scheduled to receive a vaccine. After that Christmas, Berg was visiting her mother in the hospital when an alarm sounded.
I can read EKGs because of my nursing school, and she was in ST elevation, so she was having a cardiac crisis. And they do the code, the doctor comes up to me, and she gives me this look that I've seen from a ton of doctors and a ton of nurses. It's the, we can't do anything else. Like, this is it.
Berg's mother died from COVID-19 complications.
It's really hard watching people still deny COVID when I watched my mom honestly die a pretty bad death because of this. She was 45 years old. Like, I lost my best friend, my absolute rock of my life.
Berg didn't let that tragedy stop her from achieving her goals. She graduated in May 2022 and now is a registered nurse at UW Health in Madison. In many ways, her story showcases the resiliency of the UW-Oshkosh community, highlighted by the pandemic. And countless other campus COVID stories also display that ability to bounce back in the face of adversity.
WPR's Joe Schultz brought us that feature on UW-Oshkosh's Campus COVID Stories. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook, Instagram, and through our podcast feed. I'm Maureen McCollum.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now to mental health walk-in clinics. The pediatric hospital in Milwaukee, Children's Wisconsin, plans to open three around the state to fill a gap in care for kids experiencing a mental health crisis. Call in with your questions, your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Amy Herbst is Children's Wisconsin's Vice President of Mental and Behavioral Health. Amy, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So Children's Wisconsin recently receiving a $3 million donation from Kohl's to open these new walk-in health clinics. Where will they be put? Where will the new clinics go?
They will be outside of Milwaukee because we do already have the Craig Yabuki Mental Health Walk-In Clinic on our Milwaukee campus. Where outside of Milwaukee is still a question we need to answer. We're busy taking a look at community needs statewide, having conversations with partners, and looking at community-wide data so that we can make a decision about the most right place to put this next walk-in clinic.
Do you think there are varying needs around the state? Like, are there deserts in pediatric mental health care in Wisconsin that need to be remedied?
Absolutely. There are deserts when we look at mental health care, and it's often related to workforce. We are all struggling to have the workforce that our kids deserve and need as it relates to their mental health. So there are some communities that have more resources than others. As you might imagine, the more rural communities can struggle in terms of geography and travel and distance. And then some of the urban communities have different struggles that our families face. So I would say there is the need everywhere, but it absolutely varies by community.
What about lessons learned with the Milwaukee clinic? You mentioned the Craig Yabuki Mental Health Walk-In Clinic that opened just about a year ago in March. What are you finding about the needs for these walk-in mental health clinics?
You are correct. We did open the Craig Yabuki Mental Health Walk-In Clinic last March. And so far, we have provided care to over 1,200 kids that were experiencing a mental health crisis. So that told us the need was great, which was not necessarily a surprise to us, but certainly proved what we thought was true. And what's interesting is about half of the families have come from Milwaukee County, but that means half of the families have traveled here to get the help that they need that they haven't been able to get anywhere else. And some of those families have come as far away as Chicago and Manitowoc and everywhere in between. So we know that the need is great, and we know that families are traveling to Milwaukee, and we think we could do better by going to them.
What are the kinds of situations that the Yabuki Clinic has encountered? What it might be like on a day-to-day basis for staffers at this clinic?
Every day is different at the walk-in clinic. Mm-hmm. And so it's all based on family need. And how we provide the service is that there is no referral needed. We don't screen anyone in. We don't screen anyone out. So it's very much based on what a family thinks they need. And if they believe that they are experiencing a mental health crisis, that's all we need. And you can walk in at any time that we're open, and we will provide you with the care that you need. I can tell you that when we look at the kids that we've seen, the over 1,200 kids so far, the biggest concerns our team has seen are anxiety, depression, school avoidance, and sadly, trauma. That's not unique to us per se, and very consistent with some of the data that we see out of the Wisconsin Office of Children's Mental Health.
You know, so what about the emergency room? I mean, why open these clinics rather than perhaps expand the offerings at existing emergency rooms?
So we actually also have a team in the emergency room, a mental health crisis team. So this is just another way that we can be available to families based on what they believe they need. The families who come to the walk-in clinic are families who do not have an emergent medical need. So they don't need to go to the emergency department where they would get excellent emergency medical care. They needed something a little bit different. And what they couldn't do was also wait for their maybe upcoming appointment with a therapist, or maybe they're on a waiting list, waiting to see a mental health provider for the first time. They needed something in between those two things. And so the urgent walk-in clinic is available to families who can't wait, but don't have an emergent medical need. It's more cost effective, and it really offers the alternative that they've been asking us for a very long time.
You know, when you say anxiety, depression, trauma, school avoidance, you know, in particular, anxiety, depression, would the walk-in clinic be able to put the patient on, the young patient on a therapy regimen in that visit? Like, would they be able to prescribe in that visit? Or is it more of an in-between triage type situation?
So I would say that what it is able to do, or what we're able to do in the walk-in clinic, is begin your mental health care right in the moment. So we're able to screen our kids for suicide, for example, and we have therapists who are engaging with the families right in that moment. We don't prescribe medications right now in the walk-in clinic. That would be something that maybe might be appropriate down the road as families engage in that care delivery. But we're able to really start in the moment by a therapist providing them with mental health care. And then that continues on beyond that day, where we connect kids with longer term care if that's what they need, and also navigation services if the family might need help with something like housing or food, or any other issues that might be stressing the family out.
Amy Herbst with us, Children's Wisconsin Vice President of Mental and Behavioral Health, on how to support mental health in Wisconsin kids and the concept of these walk-in clinics emerging around the state. Join in throughout the conversation. Call in with a question, a comment, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The pediatric hospital in Milwaukee, Children's Wisconsin, they plan to open 3 mental health walk-in clinics around the state in coming years to address the growing mental health needs of young people. Call in and ask a question. Share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Amy Herbst is here, Vice President of Mental Health and Behavioral Health at Children's Wisconsin. Let's bring on a call. Mike in Green Bay is here. Mike, hi.
Hey, it's good to talk to you. How you doing?
Doing well. What would you like to bring up?
Well, okay, a couple things. I'm a retired teacher of behavioral and emotionally traumatized kids, okay? And so first I want to say thank you a million times, you know, because our kids really need you. And the second thing is that, you know, these, you all know this, these poor kids bring all this trauma and PTSD into the classroom, and teachers aren't, you know, regular ed teachers aren't equipped with this. The universities don't train them. And so the schools are social service institutions, you know, and, you know, our poor teachers have to deal with, you know, all the anger and all the heartache that the kids bring in, you know, so you'll have, you know, 28 kids in a classroom and 15 of those kids can't learn because of the terrible things that have happened to them.
Mm. Mike, you bring up such a good point, and I want Amy to jump in here and respond. What do you hear in terms of what is happening within schools?
Mike, first, thank you for your years of teaching. Teachers are some of my favorite people, and they take such good care of the kids beyond all the important educating. So thank you for that. And you're right, our kids are absolutely suffering. Children's provides a significant amount of school-based mental health care now around the state of Wisconsin, where we have therapists in schools all day long, providing therapy for kids and consultation to the teachers and administrators. And we are one of many organizations who are doing this. Also, related to that presence, there's been really nice bipartisan support from the legislature and the governor's office to help fund some of that work across the state. And there's more coming. So you're right, kids are often coming to school, and that's where we're seeing the trauma that they've experienced. That's where we're seeing the impact of the pandemic. And the good news for Wisconsin kids is that there's a lot of energy going into bringing mental health care into the schools. It removes a lot of barriers to access. So we're hoping to do our part so that teachers are equipped with the information and knowledge that they need, and that they can spend more of their time teaching and educating.
Governor Evers declared it the year of mental health, and I just want to follow up on that connection to the state. How is Children's working with the state, you know, to address these needs, and what is the role when the governor calls it the year of mental health, and what you can bring to this issue, to this crisis?
We have been lucky to work with the governor's office and the legislature throughout the years, all of the years, regardless of who is the governor and who's in the legislature. And we're grateful for that, because there really is a strong support on both sides of the aisle to improve kids' mental health. So we and others have been able to have the conversations we need and the partnerships that we need to think about what is it that we need from our government partners so that we can provide the mental health care that our kids deserve. We are lucky in Wisconsin to have this kind of support from the governor and the legislature, and it really does allow us to do things like go into the schools and provide mental health care in the schools. And also, there's a very important training program for workforce related to qualified treatment trainees, which helps us bring the therapists to the workforce that our kids and families need. And that support from the governor's office has allowed us and many other organizations to train therapists to be the therapists that our kids need.
Following up there on staffing, Wisconsin facing a shortage of mental health and other healthcare professionals, what challenges does that mean for your organization, for Children's Wisconsin, in the walk-in mental health clinics?
Yes. Yeah, so there is a shortage of mental health providers in the state of Wisconsin and across the nation. And this means we don't have the therapists, the psychologists, or the psychiatrists that our kids need. So what it often means is for families is that they have to wait for the care that their kids need and deserve. And some kids can wait because that wait is short, or because maybe they were able to identify a need very early. But for other kids, that wait is just too much. And the issues that they're struggling with continue to be more and more difficult. And so oftentimes, those are the families that we see in the Craigie Buki Mental Health Walk-In Clinic because they couldn't access the care that they needed in a more timely fashion. And now they find themselves having an urgent need and can no longer wait. So we're grateful to be able to be there for them in that moment, but we still have to do the work so that families are getting the care that they need in a more timely fashion.
And I'm sure it puts pressure on your staff to be able to make the referrals. I mean, your staff is trying to refer out these kids and place them, you know, with the healthcare needs. And if they're not able to get them to that next stage, I mean, that puts some enormous pressure on your walk-in clinic.
It does. You know, the walk-in clinic works as good as the back door works, which means we do need that next place for our kids to go to. And some of them need to see a therapist. Some of them need to see a psychiatrist for medications. Some of them might need more higher level of care, like intensive outpatient services. And so we're lucky to have excellent partnerships around the state so that we can work with our partners to be part of the solution. And then also related to that, we opened up a connections clinic, again, with support from the governor's office to address just this need. So for kids where we just can't get them to that next place in a more timely fashion, they can come back the next day and see a therapist in our connections clinic that will continue to care for them until they get to that next right place.
And very quickly, timeline for these new clinics enabled through the $3 million donation from Kohl's. Do you have any type of firm timeline?
We do. So we will open the first walk-in clinic outside of Milwaukee before the end of this year, hopefully in the third quarter. And then we will open the second clinic in 2024 and the third clinic in 2025. Maybe we can even move faster than that. But right now, that's our goal, is one each year starting this year.
Amy, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for covering this topic.
Amy Herbst is Children's Wisconsin's Vice President of Mental and Behavioral Health. If you or a loved one is having thoughts of suicide, call or text 988 to reach the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. Again, it's three digits, 988. And for disclosure, Children's Wisconsin is a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.